This is the Falcoholic Podcast, the official podcast of the Atlanta Falcons on the SB Nation Podcast Network. I am David Walker. You can call me DW. And this is the next part in our series of podcasts where you, the listener, will get to know our stable of writers over at thefalcoholic.com. Our next writer is one of my personal favorites. Don't tell the others. He is a frequent guest on the Falcoholic Live on this very podcast and one of the fantastic stable of writers over at thefalcoholic.com. I'm talking, of course, about Adnan Ekic. Adnan, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing well. You know, we're getting through it. March seemed like it was forever, and these past 2 months have just flown by.
2 months? It feels like 2 years. yeah, I'm with you. It feels like hopefully we'll turn a corner here soon and get to a 2020 NFL season. So
hopefully a full season with a lot of good health, a lot of a lot of good luck, and you know, who knows, but yeah. Hopefully we can hope. Yeah.
We're going to be ready to cover it at thefalcoholic.com. So let's just dive into it. Obviously you've been writing at the site now for a couple of years. And before that, you know, as with all the writers at the site, you were a Falcons fan. So what made you a Falcons fan, and how long ago did that mistake happen?
Well, unfortunately, no, I'm kidding. A little bit of a background about me is my parents came from Bosnia, from Europe, and they moved here to the United States when I was 3 years old in 2000. So when they moved here, they moved directly to Atlanta, and they stayed in Atlanta. And I wasn't a huge sports fan as a kid, but something ended up clicking for me after a few years of my life, where I think it was when I was around 9 or 10 years old, where I really started like getting into sports. It started with soccer, and then it migrated over, that love migrated over to basketball, and then eventually to football. So the fact that I was already here in Atlanta, I was like, Atlanta has these professional sports teams. I felt this connection with each and every one of them. It started out with the Hawks in the NBA, the Thrashers in the NHL, RIP.
Oh, man.
And, you know, eventually I was like, all right, I live here. I love the city of Atlanta. Even though I wasn't born here, I might as well have been, because my first conscious memory as a child came when I was in Atlanta. So I was like, all right, I mean, let's do it. This Falcons team, it represents me. I'm from Atlanta. I am raised in Atlanta, and you know, I was like, all right, I can't wait to watch some of these teams win these multiple titles over the course of my lifetime over these next few years. It's gonna be a hell of a ride.
Yeah, I think you got that last part absolutely right. As Dave has said, watching the Falcons is like being on a roller coaster with a very bad safety record. all right. So as you mentioned, most of your early memories are when you were in Atlanta. So what is one of your earliest memories, fond or otherwise, about the Falcons?
Like I said, I wasn't big into sports when I was like a child, like many others. I wasn't 3-4 years old and my dad put a football in my hand, for example. I didn't really start getting into it until 2007. It was the 2006 FIFA World Cup, which really got me into it in soccer. And, yep. You know, I didn't really start getting into football until the 2007 season. And I think I just blocked out a lot of that one. So it was, I was like, man, this team really sucks in 07. But I didn't fall in love with it because of Mike Vick, or, you know, I missed the Vick era. So one of my really early memories was Matt Ryan's first game in 2008.
Against Detroit,
when he threw that first pass, it was to Michael Jenkins, 60-something yards. And I was like, man, we've got a player. and I mean, I was too young to be, like, analyzing anything. I was just like, the Falcons were just winning a lot. And, you know, I was devastated when they lost in those 2008 playoffs. Like, I know that's not one of the heartbreaking losses that we all remember, because that Cardinals team was really good. And Larry Fitzgerald just, like, took the league by storm in those playoffs on their way to the Super Bowl. But as, like, a child who never really experienced any, like, true, like, defeat in sports like that, I was, like, yeah. I was heartbroken.
Yeah, my earliest memory was 1980. Which, of course, ended in a painful playoff loss to the Cowboys. So it seems like you and I have that in common, where we have these early – our early memories of the Falcons ends in the playoff loss that broke our hearts.
I should have just, like, seen that as a sign of things to come. But I was like, oh, well,
yes,
they'll be back in 09. They'll win, like, 13, 14 games.
Yeah, exactly. And I remember that optimism as well. You know, that's welcome to being a Falcons fan. All right. So it's one thing to watch Matty Ice and Roddy White and the guys who have come through this team over the years. But what made you want to write about the Falcons?
So I was in high school. This was it wasn't a few years ago, but it wasn't really that long ago. When I was in high school, I started writing for the soccer site, for the soccer website. And I did that for a few years. And it was going pretty well. And the website ended up folding. So at the same time, I was like, you know what? Like, I'm pretty good at this writing thing. So let me try and focus this attention to something that I love, which, you know, the Atlanta Falcons were right there. There were so many, like, startup sites writing about football just because the sport is so popular. So on my 18th birthday, I remember at this point, I graduated from high school on my 18th birthday. I applied for Fansided's Blogging Dirty. So I went over there and I wrote over there for a few years. A lot of slideshows. It wasn't as fun as the Falcoholic is. So I'll just say that. But but yeah, over the years, I like honed my writing. And it was after the 2017 season, after the loss to the Eagles in the divisional round, like a week later, I thought I was finished writing, because early on in that season, I just like had it with some stuff. So, you know, I just stopped. I just stopped writing completely for Blogging Dirty. And I took that entire, like, year off after week three, after that week three win against the Lions. And it was Kevin Knight who messaged me after the 2017 playoff loss, gauging my interest in joining the Falcoholic, because I wrote with Kevin at Blogging Dirty, and I wrote with Eric and Carter Brazil, and who are all fantastic members of our staff right now.
Yep.
And I was at first, I was reluctant because I thought that my writing days were over, but then I ended up taking him up on the offer. I spoke with Dave Choate, and the rest has been history. I've enjoyed it every moment since.
Yep, and we have gladly poached from the other guys repeatedly over the years, and you certainly fall into the bucket of some of our good writers that we've been able to steal away. All right. Now that you have been writing about this team for several years, it is inevitable that you put something on paper, you put something on the interwebs, Twitter, what have you, where you had a strong opinion about something. And in hindsight, you're like, oh my God, why did I do that? Why did I say that? So what is one of your worst takes when it comes to the Falcons?
My worst one was actually from before I ever started writing. So it was the 2013 season. We were coming off of the 2012 NFC Championship game, where we blew that 17-0 lead to San Francisco. And, you know, I'm going into 2013. Like, you know what? We're going to be back. Like, you know, we're going to take that next step. We're going to the Super Bowl, because we fixed our running back position. We signed Steven Jackson from the St. Louis Rams, because Michael Turner, one of my favorite Falcons of all time, he was pretty run down in 2012 because Mike Mularkey just ran him into the ground year after year. So we didn't really have that presence in the run game. And I was like, oh, Steven Jackson, he's going to fix it all. And he had that great first game against the Saints. And then after that, it was just like, oof, it wasn't good. But, you know, that's one of the bad takes that really sticks out to me to this day, because that 2013 season was an absolute disaster.
Oh, yeah, it was. All right. Flip side, what is one of your best takes you've had where maybe people disagree with you at the time, people thought you were nuts, but history has proven you right?
Okay, so one of my best takes was I was so excited when we drafted Grady Jarrett in the fifth round. I think it was somewhere in – it's somewhere deep in the interwebs, but one of the very few podcasts that that we did at the other website, I remember I just spoke ad nauseum for like 20 minutes just praising Grady Jarrett, talking about this is one of the best moves that Dimitroff has ever made. This is such a steal. I can't believe that these idiots let him fall to the fifth round. And it turned out to be exactly what I thought it was.
Yeah, and he's arguably one of our best defenders in the past decade that we've drafted. So,
it's not a high bar to climb there.
It's not, but, you know, fifth rounder, he's, you know, I would say he probably is. I can't think. Maybe some would say Deion Jones.
It's fair.
Maybe Trufant, but no, I think Brady's up.
Not Vic.
Yeah. No, not Vic. Oh, God. Yeah, we're moving on from that one real fast. All right. A little bit different. What is something about you that our readers or listeners may not know?
I am pretty much at every single Atlanta Hawks home game. So I do this thing with the Hawks, with their fan section, where I help lead it. So out of the last like 206 Hawks home games over the past like 500 over the past 5 years, I've like gone to 200 of those games. So yes, I've kept count. So that's a really cool thing that I do outside of writing.
Yep. And for those of you who are also fans of the Hawks, if you've watched the Hawks game, there's a very good chance you've seen Adnan on TV. There's a very, very good chance you've seen him repeatedly on the TV and you just haven't realized it. So yeah, if we get some Hawks basketball back sometime this year or early next year, you guys will have to keep an eye out for the man in the crazy section at the Hawks arena. So
it's the face paint. The camera loves the face paint.
Yes, it does. All right. Your all-time favorite NFL player does not, and Eric took us in a little bit different path. Everyone else before him had answered Falcons, but I'm going to open it up. Your all-time favorite NFL player and why?
My all-time, I'm going to go Falcons on this one too. And it's just going to be sentimental, but Roddy White for me, because Roddy White was not afraid to trash talk. Like that's one of the things that I loved when he'd always get into it with Saints fans and with the New Orleans Saints. I loved it. He just like represented the city so well. And, you know, I know that he had a few penalties. He had a few flags here and there. But Roddy White at his peak was one of the best wide receivers in the NFL. And I just love the energy. I just love the swag that he had with the team. It's something that I've hoped for in a lot of players over the years, but not many could match him up with it.
Yeah. That's a great, great pick. He is one of the biggest personalities that has come through Atlanta for sure. He doesn't get the attention that maybe a Deion Sanders did when he was here in Atlanta, but I would argue Roddy was just as much, if not more so, of a competitor. Like you said, he was just a fantastic trash talker. I think about that touchdown that Ryan threw to him back in 2012 in the playoffs against the against Richard Seahawks. Sherman and the Seahawks. Yeah. And when he caught that and he popped up and just immediately started gabbing at Richard Sherman. And you've got to love Roddy for that. You've got to love him. Great.
Yeah, because they had some serious history going into it. I remember how much Sherman was respecting him on like the top 100 show and everything.
Yep. Yep. And Roddy paid him back, which is what I loved about Hot Rod. All right. We'll keep this one to the Falcons. Who is your favorite active player on the Falcons and why?
I mean, it's going to be a very bland pick, but Matt Ryan. Because this is the guy who came in and he pretty much saved this franchise. Like, this franchise would have been a laughingstock over the past 10 years if Matt Ryan didn't come in. And I just can't tell you how much I respect the fact that through all the unfair and undeserved scrutiny over the years, having to be in Mike Vick's shadow and having like a portion of the fan base still to this day just like constantly disrespect him. And I still have no idea how he's just like kept that cool head on him and has never like done anything outside of the field which warrants any attention. Which is a very good thing for your franchise quarterback to not ever have like any attention go on him, except for like when he had his twins. And the only attention he has is when he or his wife post about their twins, which is, you know, have all of the attention, that keep that attention coming, because his twins are adorable. But yeah, absolutely, Matt Ryan for me. He's just like, he's represented this team so well.
I'm with you, man. Can't argue with that. And arguably of any of the players currently on the roster, maybe besides Julio, he is almost assuredly going to make it into the Hall of Fame one day. I think he's on a quick path to that. And it's very rare you get to see a Hall of Fame player play for your team in your lifetime. So very, very cool. All right. So before we talk about your favorite top three Falcons of all time, your favorite coach, and some of the other questions I'm going to hit you with, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. And we're back on the Falcoholic Podcast. This is David Walker. I'm joined by Adnan Ekic, and we're talking about his time as a Falcons fan, someone that writes about this team willingly. And we have talked about some of his earliest memories, his worst and best takes. But now I want to, Adnan, have you picture yourself as your teenage version. You're putting three posters on your wall to show your friends that you're a hardcore Falcons fan. What three players, all time, what three Falcons players are going to get posterized in Adnan's bedroom?
Oh, okay. So there's going to be some discrepancy here, because I did say that Roddy White's my all-time favorite player. Mm-hmm. But if we're talking about for me, the top three all-time Falcons, as in like the best representations of this team of all time, the players that you think Falcons when you're talking about it, I'm not putting him in my top three, and not to any like fault of his own, just because the top three for me is so like it's so distinct. There's so much credibility, and there's just so many great years. Yep. So many great players. Matt Ryan would be at the top, because in my opinion, he's the greatest player in franchise history, and unquestionably, he's the quarterback. He's been here for 12 years already, top 10 all time in passing, the most successful like time period in franchise history by far has come mm-hmm. under his watch. Julio Jones, who is one of the greatest wide receivers of all time. And like you said, he's going to be a Hall of Famer, another player where we watched him and we knew that we're watching a Hall of Fame talent, and, you know, someone who is breaking the records right now. Julio Jones already has the most, I think, receiving yards in franchise history, already has the most catches, or is about to have the most catches in franchise history, and he's not mm-hmm. even close to being done. And I'd also put Jesse Tuggle as my number three, because I know this came like before my time. Jesse Tuggle's heyday actually came before I was even conceived, if we're being honest.
Oh man, now I'm feeling really old.
But if you're talking about someone who has been a lifer for the Atlanta Falcons, his entire career was spent in Atlanta. And I just pulled up his stats just to make sure, but 14 years total, all in Atlanta. I can't tell you how much I respect longevity when I'm looking at stuff like this. Matt, Julio, and Tuggle, well, Julio not yet, but he will, all have spent at least a decade in Falcons colors. Julio Jones drafted in 2011. It will have been a decade by the end of this contract. All Falcons for life, and you know, all guys who I could not imagine ever playing on another team.
Yeah, it's a fantastic top three. I'm not going to argue with you because I think mine would be very, very similar, if not identical. All right, a little bit of a different question I'm going to hit you with here. And that is your all-time favorite Falcons coach. Yeah, we've had some very interesting characters come through. We've had some more bland coaches. It doesn't even have to be a head coach. It could be an assistant coach. Just one of your favorites that you liked seeing him or you liked his style.
Will I get run out of town if I said Kyle Shanahan?
No, not at all.
Because, I mean, just – oh my God, I'm not gonna say Kyle Shanahan, but I really want to, just because this team, you can't argue that this team reached new heights because of him, and I have no doubt in my mind, had San Francisco not hired him, I remember that 2016. I'm going off on just a little bit of a tangent, but it was before the Super Bowl, and I was tracking Kyle Shanahan and the head coaching availabilities very closely every single day, and every single team was filling their vacancies. The Broncos, who were the favorite to land him, ended up going with Vance Joseph, I think. Great job, John Elway, by the way. And it got down to the 49ers, and they were the last vacancy, and I'm like, please, just hire someone else. And then I had no doubt in my mind that we'd be right back in the Super Bowl the next year, and I think we would have had Shanahan stayed in Atlanta, because that 2017 defense was very good and the offense wasn't. I'm going to go official answer. I'll go with Mike Smith, Smitty, and I know – can you hear me, DW?
Yeah, man.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to make sure my connection wasn't off. So, Smitty, I know he – the way it finished, it left a bad taste in everyone's mouth, but just someone who everyone says is the nicest guy off the field, and someone who really, he along with Matt Ryan and Thomas Dimitroff helped take this franchise out of the doldrums, and that's something I'll always remember him for. I'll always be grateful for those first few years through 2012. I'll yeah. choose to ignore the last two seasons. But also a really unfortunate thing was his heart attack, yep. which really took some of that fire out of him. I think it was in 2009 when he almost went toe-to-toe with D'Angelo Hall, and it was one of those moments where it was just so hype. And, you know, I think that heart attack ended up taking something out of him in regards to that, yeah. like, fire on the field. But – you know, Mike Smith is someone I'll always appreciate for what he did for this franchise.
Yeah, I think it's – now that we've had a little bit of time to breathe, I think it's a very good way to look at it. He stabilized this franchise in a time where very, very few people would have wanted this job coming out of the 2007 season. So, absolutely. Kudos to Mike Smith. All right. Your most – underrated Falcons player through the years?
I'm going to go with Jonathan Babineau for this one.
Ooh, I like it.
Babineau, he's someone – nobody really thinks about him that much when you're talking about the great Falcons. But another player who was an absolute lifer for this team, he just came in and he put his hard hat on and he did the work. Every single year he was a great presence on the interior of the defensive line. And, you know, it would have been great had we had a Jonathan Babineau in his prime these past few years to put next to Grady Jarrett, yeah. Because I can only imagine just how efficient, just how good that interior part of that defensive line would have been, because he's never played with a DT who was as good as Grady Jarrett. But and I'm not saying he was as good as Grady Jarrett is now, but he was in a sense the Grady Jarrett of the mid 2000s and early 2010s. Yep. So I mean, Babs is a guy who I'm always going to have a soft spot for.
Agreed. And very good choice for underrated. Flip side of that coin. One of the most overrated Falcons. And it doesn't even have to be someone that necessarily made the roster, but maybe got a ton of hype that you didn't understand, that you think just didn't pan out.
Well, people know my disdain for Sean Harlow on this podcast, or basically on our website, just because I don't have anything against Sean Harlow. Like as a person, nothing against him at all, but the fact that he's still like getting these opportunities to be on the roster is just baffling to me. And I don't mean to pick on him, but when I watch him in preseason, which is the only time he gets snaps, he's just insanely bad. And I don't have anything against him, but I feel like whenever he's on the field, then that's endangering Matt Ryan's life, because and I really like Matt Ryan, so I don't want anything bad to happen to him. But the fact that Sean Harlow still keeps getting chances just because he was a fourth round pick is just like, it is just pretty baffling to me. Like, cut your losses and just move on at this point. And I feel really bad for picking on him so many times over and over again.
I completely get it. All right. This may be easy. I don't know. I'm going to leave this up to you, but what is the most gratifying Falcons win that you personally have experienced?
So I know the go-to for this one is the 2016 NFC Championship game.
Right.
Just because, you know, that was a revenge for that absolute like nightmare in 2010. And, you know, you go up 31-0 and I still remember being so hyped. But I'm going to go a week earlier. That divisional round win against the Seattle Seahawks was for me, because, well, personally, I was at that game. So me and a few friends ended up going to that game. So that'll always have a fond place in my heart, because I just remember how loud the Georgia Dome was after Ricardo Allen got that pick. I had never heard the Dome that loud in my life before, on TV or in person or anything. And I remember the hype going into it. We were all so nervous going into that game, because Matt Ryan at this point had that reputation as someone who couldn't get it done in the playoffs. He had one playoff win in his career, and he had that great 2016 season where he was pretty much, we knew he was going to win the MVP. I mean, there were some questions as to whether or not the media guys would give it to him or not, but it was clear cut that he was the MVP. But he had that monkey on his back of only one playoff win in his first, eight seasons.
Yeah.
It was against Seattle in 2012. And even in that game, it was Seattle came from behind and almost won.
Yeah.
And then
the
last playoff game he had played, Matt Ryan had played in his career, was a choke at that point against the San Francisco 49ers. And, you know, I'm not saying it was like completely his fault, but he did have his blame in that game. He had that fumbled snap. He had it late in that game, which really hurt. And, you know, we failed to go downfield and score a touchdown. There were some talks about a holding on Roddy White by, I think it was Navarro Bowman. But, you know, that's not really talked about as much anymore because we didn't try to sue the NFL.
that's glorious.
But, so that was a game where I was so nervous going into it, because Had we lost that one, then it would have been like the narrative would have just been overwhelming about Matt Ryan's this playoff choker. And we went in there and we destroyed them. Like it was close at first. And then that Ben Garland safety happened where Russell Wilson tripped into the end zone. And I just remember the noise level at the dome at that point was just incredible. It was you couldn't hear yourself scream. Like everyone was just like was yelling so loud you couldn't even hear yourself. And then after that it was just like it was an absolute clinic. When Levine Toilolo was stiff arming players, you knew that they had no chance of beating us in this game. And there was also revenge on our minds in that one too, because earlier that season, that was the Richard Sherman no pass interference call against Julio Jones in Seattle. And also, one thing that really bugged me in that game, even more so than that no call on pass interference, people don't really tend to remember this, but Seattle played a very dirty game in that one.
Oh yeah,
it was Michael Bennett every single time was crushing Matt Ryan after he had gotten rid of the ball, and it was a few seconds afterwards, and we were and the game was in Seattle, so the referee didn't dare make those calls in front of the 12th man at CenturyLink Field, but he kept just crushing Matt Ryan from the blind side over and over again, and that was one of those moments where, and again, I'm going off on a bit of a tangent, but in 2013, it was flashbacks to nobody on the offensive line coming to Matt Ryan's aid when Kenny Vaccaro just nailed him against the Saints. And that was the game where something changed. It was Jake Matthews had this low block on Michael Bennett, and it wasn't a dirty play. The block was technically allowed, like in terms of the rules, but it was one of those like gentlemen's agreements where you don't really block low like that.
Yeah. Yep.
But Jake Matthews really stood up for Matt Ryan. He went low and he completely like took out Michael Bennett's ankles.
Yep.
And I remember Bennett after that game was just so salty. He was pissed off talking about Jake Matthews. And I'm over here like, bro, you were trying to like pretty much hurt our quarterback that entire game. And I just found this newfound level of respect for Jake Matthews after that one because, you know, I was like, yes, like he absolutely deserved that. And I remember late in that game, Bennett was trying to like go at it with Schrader. I think he was trying to like eye gouge him or something. And the team just kept their cool. I remember the mic'd up sound effects where Matt Ryan was like, oh, like we have more stuff to play for than this. Just like keep a calm head and, you know, get out of here with a win. So that Seattle game for me just always sticks out. I know that it's a very long answer with a lot of tangents, but what are we here for?
I love it, man. I love it. All right. You and I both know what the hardest loss was. So I'll just go ahead and ask you, how hard did 28-3 hit you, and who do you blame? Like, do you blame one particular person, several people? Like, what was your process for that game?
That was one of the hardest. That was by far the hardest sports moment of my life, like no doubt. And you know, 28-3, and I still to this day sometimes think about it. I'm like just in the middle of doing something, just like driving, and it'll just hit me. Like, man, it was the third quarter and we were up by four possessions. Like some teams don't even have four possessions between that point and the end of the game period.
Yep.
But it really hit me hard, and it hit me that night immediately. And then it was even worse the next morning because thankfully I didn't have school the next morning because I have Mondays off. I had Mondays off that semester. So I could like sleep in. But when I woke up, I was just like, oh my, like everyone around me was saying how it felt like I'd like literally been poisoned, where I just didn't want to talk to anyone. It was just like in that night, that was one of those Hawks games we had that night. And the entire arena just felt, the entire city, like downtown, it just felt completely subdued. I like took MARTA and nobody was really in the mood for like anything. But I, if I have to blame a person, I absolutely go back to blaming Devontae Freeman for that missed block. And it's one of those things. I know Devontae Freeman did so much good, and we maybe aren't even in that position without him that season. And I feel bad that this is my lasting memory of him, but just the fact that I can't get it out. I can't get it out of my head. That was the turning point of that game, where Hightower just like bypassed a frozen Freeman, forced the fumble, and then New England just had all momentum. And the reason for it is, I think at that point the scoreline was 28-9, and Matt Ryan had Aldrick Robinson downfield. There was an alternate camera angle where you're looking at it from Matt Ryan's viewpoint. And had Devontae Freeman just chipped Hightower for just a second, not even completely block him, just chip him for a second.
Split
just
give second.
Ryan a split, another split second, because Ryan was gear. He was the reason he fumbled is because he had the ball cocked back and he was like loading up for a pass. And it was literally a half a second difference where he had Robinson wide open, streaking downfield. That would have made it 35-9. And I think after that, we're talking not only of the Falcons winning that game, but we're talking about one of the most lopsided Super Bowls of all time.
Yeah.
So that's the moment that always sticks out. And I know more stuff happened. They didn't kick the field goal. Shanahan didn't run the ball. Matthews had those holding penalties. But if you had to pinpoint one moment where, if I could take back one moment in my life, for the Falcons and just give them a do-over, that would literally be that one pinpointed moment in this 54-year history, however long it's been.
Yeah. All right. We've covered a wide range of topics about the Falcons. So let me get your final thoughts on the current regime. And that starts all the way at the top with Arthur Blank, all the way down to the janitors at the stadium. Your thoughts on the current regime and your hopes for the 2020 season.
Well, those janitors do keep a clean stadium, so you
yes,
know
they
that
do.
I'm all for them. I love Arthur Blank. I'm again someone who's done so much for the city. Someone who I really want him to have. I really want a Super Bowl trophy for him. You saw how happy he was with that MLS title, and I think a Super Bowl would be like, no disrespect to the MLS or anything, but I think a Super Bowl is what he really wants. That would be absolutely next level. But I wish I could be more optimistic, and I'm hoping I'll probably talk myself into, you know, a nice winning season, but I just completely disagree with bringing everyone back after another 7-9 season. I remember sitting here and sitting on the Falcoholic Live show going into 2019 being like, all right, we had that 7-9 season. All the goodwill from the Super Bowl is pretty much over after that. We had the injuries. If the Falcons don't make the playoffs this year, then that's it. You know, we have to have some like massive changes. And then to do the same exact thing again and to have everyone just run it back, I completely disagree with that. So, I mean, hopefully, maybe the team has a chance to possibly make the playoffs because there's an extra wild card team in the playoffs this year. It's 7 teams instead of 6. And you look back in 2015, they would have made it at an 8-8 record. But I don't know. Hopefully, I'll be more optimistic about it in the coming months. But whenever you have a franchise quarterback like Matt Ryan, and when you have the best wide receiver in the game in Julio Jones, you always have a chance.
Yep, I completely agree. All right, Adnan, thank you for doing this interview with me on the Falcoholic Podcast. Why don't you tell our listeners where they can find you, what you've got going on?
So my main place where you can find me is on Twitter, at Say Which Way is the handle. And basically we're just covering everything at the Falcoholic. You know, we're a one-stop shop is what I like to call it. for all of your Falcons news. I think everyone does a great job, starting at the top with Dave Choate. I have some fantasy previews for some players lined up, me and Evan Birchfield, who also does a fantastic job. So we have those coming in the coming weeks as we try to steer past this dead period and hopefully into a full NFL season come this fall.
Absolutely. As for me, guys, you can find me on Twitter at FalcoholicDW. Follow our Twitter account for the podcast at FalcoholicPod. And of course, you can find our articles daily at thefalcoholic.com. So for Adnan Ekic, this is David Walker. Thank you guys for listening in, and we'll talk with you next time.